it out, y'all.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Cindy's Birthday Party, the hip-hop podcast that looks at rap music and hip-hop culture from a historical and philosophical perspective. My name is Danny. I am one of three co-hosts. I have my other two co-hosts here, Zay.
What up, everybody? Coming at y'all from a southern perspective.
And my other homeboy here, E.
Hey, what's happening, y'all? Tripping off Zay there, putting extra drawl in his intro there. But yes. Yeah.
So on our last episode, Zay, you were coming off of a surgery and you were on Percocet.
And
that was your excuse for being crazy.
If I say something stupid today, I'm going to be real. It ain't the Percocet.
Molly Percocet.
So we have no excuse on that. Before we really get started on our topic, a couple of things. We just want to say that last week we had our first episode, and for those of you who don't know, that first episode, if you go to our website, is called Welcome to Cindy's Birthday Party. It is the introduction episode, so you may want to check that out if you haven't already. But we were expecting to maybe get about 50 listens, guys, would you say, on our very first
episode. Well, I didn't have any high expectations, really. Cool, let's bring it in and see what people think.
We didn't have high expectations. Well, we actually, as of today, before we started recording here in Real Fan Studios here in Atlanta, we're at about 179 listens for the first week. So we just want to say thank you so much to everybody who listened.
Definitely appreciate that.
Indeed. And hopefully you like what you heard and that you're going to pass it on to other people. Tell as many people as you can.
Pass it on.
No doubt. Subscribe, follow us, everything, because your support is what really will keep this going.
We are men of the people. So, yeah, we need y'all support just like we got y'all back, too. You know what I'm talking about?
That's right. And the other thing we have to address that is also related to last week's episodes. So as you know, if you listened to episode 3, which was Mount Rushmore, the Final Four, we listed the four MCs that we had for our Mount Rushmore.
Right.
And they were LL Cool J, Rakim, Jay-Z, and Tupac.
Yes.
Three of those people had very little issue with. But one choice, LL Cool J, a lot of people had took issue with.
Yes.
And we got a lot of feedback, or kickback, I should say, on that one, people thinking that LL shouldn't have been on there. I just say that, first of all, it's our list.
Right.
So it's not...
it's not yawns.
That is correct.
It's ours.
Yes. That is a good point, Eric. Thank you. Yeah. And there is no wrong answer. So a lot of people said, well, why didn't you have KRS-One on there instead?
Mm.
It's an excellent choice. We can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people said, you know, you should have had Ice Cube on there instead.
Shout out to my cousin Mo, by the way.
Right. So, you know, again, not a bad choice. And certainly he was a candidate. They were both candidates. We didn't choose them. So we just want to say, if you have someone else as your choice, it's not a bad choice. There's no wrong answer.
Right.
But we do thoroughly appreciate the feedback that we've gotten. And I just want to say to everyone who's listened, any feedback that you give us, whether it be positive or negative, we appreciate it.
Right.
And we will respond in some way, shape, or form. Absolutely. We will let you know that we've heard from you and that we appreciate what you've given us. Because part of what we want to do is we want to be able to spark debate or spark some conversation.
Right.
And we want that interaction.
Just don't call me 3 a.m, you know what I'm saying, trying to argue with me about who I left off the list.
Right.
Call me during the day, you know what I'm saying, when I'm up and, you know what I'm saying, I'm wide awake at this point, so, you know.
Totally understand that part.
Man, why the hell you leave such and such off?
Yeah, that's that.
Come on, man.
You can't get a rational answer at 3 a.m.
No, exactly. You cannot,
And one last thing before we move on and get to our topic, the other thing that I wanted to say is the name, Cindy's Birthday Party. If many of you who may not have listened to our earlier episode, may not have heard our introductory episode, don't understand where the name came from. The name actually comes from the origins of hip-hop. DJ Kool Herc, who is the godfather of hip-hop, the first time he did what we now know as hip-hop with extending the breaks on records was at his sister Cindy's birthday party back in 1973. So it is an homage to Kool Herc for starting this culture that we all love. But if you want to get more details on it, go back and listen to our first episode, which is titled Welcome to Cindy's Birthday Party, and you can get all of the, you can get a more in-depth definition and understanding of that.
Well said, Mr. Danny.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Okay, so now we're going to get into today's topic, which is the golden era.
The golden era.
So now the thing about this is, if you're like we are in your 40s, you probably use that term a lot. If you're someone like our assistant Corbin, who is, happy birthday, Corbin. He just turned 25 today.
Shout out to Corbin.
Right.
The Mr. big Corbin 25.
But if you're a young dude like Corbin, and you probably hear older cats all the time always talking about the golden era, the golden
era.
But very seldom does anybody actually give a definition of exactly what that is.
Right.
A lot of times people say the golden era. What exactly do you mean? Do you just mean the stuff that you like?
Right.
You know? So what we're going to try to do on this show today is we're going to try to give a definition of what that is.
Right.
What that means, when it, when the golden era actually occurred, and who was involved. I think those are the biggest parts of actually giving a definition, would you guys say?
I agree with that, yeah.
Right. So with that in mind, what would you guys say, what would you say if you had to give a definition of the golden era? If a 15-year-old or a Corbin, not far from 15, a 25-year-old, if a 25-year-old came up to you and said, man, what do you mean about the golden era of rap music or of hip-hop?
Well, what I would tell them, that is the year that the where everything, it like reached its pinnacle, where it was at its best, where I look at it like this, like no one, because, you know, back in the earlier days, and especially my definition of when it began, more than likely, like everybody, no one tried to sound like one another. Everybody wanted their own sound. Everybody wanted their own, you know, everybody wanted to rap their own different way. Although, like, you look at a guy like Rakim, he changed the way hip hop sounds, at, you know, at this point from a rapping standpoint. But everybody wanted to add their own element, their own niche. Now, don't get me wrong, like Sammy Davis Jr. said, everybody stole from one another at from because we're all influenced by some by one point or another, but we all wanted to add our own element. We all wanted to add our own sound. And to me, the golden era of hip hop was that era where no one sounded alike. Like, you could put a song on the radio and you automatically knew who that artist was. That's what I look like. I think it's kind of now. Don't get me wrong. No, I don't think that there is no wrong answer in this point, because from an age standpoint, there are different eras where they will totally disagree. The person, somebody in their 50s who listens to hip-hop from its beginning probably say it started in 79.
You know, I'm, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was in, and I've shouted this out on previous episodes before, but Jay Kwan, the Foundation, he does a really good job of historically given a layout of especially that first age of hip hop. And one of the things that he says is that people who are hip hop purists from the, from like 79 or even before that, from the really early stages of hip hop culture, will tell you that they're in their minds, not the golden age of rap music, but the golden age of hip hop ended when the MC became dominant over the DJ. So specifically, what is normally mentioned is, well, because, you know, with this, this whole thing having started with the DJ, that they feel like, you know, that's when it kind of ended. And specifically, what is usually mentioned is Grandmaster Flash's song, The Message, because although the group is called Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Flash literally does nothing on that record, doesn't produce it. His voice is not heard. He has no input whatsoever. And that was a hit, a crossover hit, and a lot of people feel like, you know, at that point, it ceased to be about the DJ. So to your point, Jose, uh-huh. you know, their golden era, or what they look at as the golden era, is different from perhaps what we would look
right.
at.
Right.
For me, I would say kind of a situation where, similar to what Zay was saying, it kind of, you went away from the basic hip-hop, the hibbit. It kind of, the producing was better. The right. DJing became better. Right. The lyrics became better. You yeah. had to be better.
Yes.
And not only that, you had so many different groups.
Yes.
There were just so much good music. Nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, there was you had your terrible
yeah,
groups
I mean,
out there. But,
every era yeah. had whack MCs.
Right.
Yeah, but that
no,
is true. That
no,
is
we you had just, there was group after group after individual artists after individual artists, and it was just great
yes.
hip-hop music for a long period of time. And then all of a sudden, it was like a fall off. So I'm sure we'll discuss
yes.
what years it started.
Definitely.
That kind of comes into play, too. What year did you think it actually started up? Me, I said 86. Mm-hmm. It kind of, the techniques had to branch out a little further than what you heard, you know, before that. Mm-hmm. The music got a little more complicated, a little more complex. No longer was it a band recording. You got a lot of, for example, you got a lot of hip hop like Curtis Blow songs. It's just like a band basically playing bass guitars and there's
right.
guitars and pianos
keyboards,
and
yeah.
stuff like that, and him rapping over it, and they record that, and that's the beat in the background.
Quick fun fact about that, real quick.
Go for it.
And I probably should save this for another time. But you mentioned about Curtis Blow's band in particular.
Yeah.
Rakim's brother is actually playing the keyboards. For
wow.
Curtis Blow on a lot, yeah.
Did not
when they talk
that.
About Stevie Blass on the keyboards playing, well, Rakim references that later on, but that's actually his brother,
okay.
wow.
who also played the keyboards on "Move the Crowd," but he played for Curtis Blow.
Wow,
just a
did
little,
not know that.
Yeah.
A little tidbit,
yeah,
little tidbit
just
from
how
Danny.
Stuff is so interrelated, a lot
yeah,
of
right? Yeah, exactly. yeah, but you know, things had to be more. They stepped their game up basically from
yeah.
from the older days, and so that's and it just kind of took off from there, you know. So
yeah, that is true. Well, for me. I think that my definition of the golden era, and I've had this conversation with so many people over the years, so I guess it's helped me kind of to kind of formulate an answer for it. But I think of the time when the artistry and the commercial viability were on an even playing field.
Right, right.
So you didn't necessarily have to be the most commercially viable. But you could be artistic, or you could be more about the culture, and you could still get that level of respect.
Right.
And you still had the same exposure. And I think in the golden era, it's kind of like there was a balance there. And there's also a balance. I think that, for me, the golden era is also the time when we, even as fans, started to really, at some point, the light came on for us,
mm.
and we realized that this was art.
Yeah.
One of the things, and Eric and I were talking about this earlier, one of the things that I think rap music still struggles with is that there are large swaths of the population who still do not see it as art.
Right.
I think a
right.
lot of people still see rapping as some dudes talking over some music.
Right.
And I think that a good portion of us, we really started to respect it and accept that it was art at that point because the MCs were taking it so far.
Just a quick thought in my head, because, you know, when I came in, when you were playing De La on your phone or on the iPad there, I thought about a song on that record just from you mentioning that. I can't remember which one, but remember at the end they had the hillbilly dude talking about rap. It
yeah,
sucks.
Right, yes.
I hate it.
Right.
And
right.
then he said something about, you know, it's just N-words talking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, not so much from that hillbilly perspective, from even just from like your own parents, still
right,
believe
right,
it's
right.
just some guys talking and
yeah.
happening to rhyme words, and there's something banging in the background, a noise and beats, and
right.
ta-da.
And I think even with
go ahead.
I think even with those of us who claim to like or love it, I think we suffer from that as well. I think that's
right.
why there's so many dudes out here trying to rap,
right?
Because because everybody thinks they can do it.
Right.
And the only reason right. everybody would think they could do something is if they don't understand the complexities of it.
Right.
And they, you know, like everybody can, like, look, we all know they're bad singers, right? But everybody's not going to say, I want to be a singer.
True.
Every kid is not going to say, hey, I'm going to be a singer because they realize, because we see singing as a talent.
Yes.
Or we see playing instruments as art.
Right.
And we don't necessarily see a DJ on the ones and twos cutting up a record as art.
Right. We don't and even as when a guy's, you know, trying to spit on a mic or whatever, that person most likely, especially when they're earlier into it, they don't look at it as an art form. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
Just saying, hey man, I heard this man rap and I can do it too. You know, and
that happens a lot.
That was crazy.
That is probably a majority of hip hop artists today. Yes.
And that's when my mindset changed, you know, from that aspect to the art form of it, because when I was listening to it, you know, as a kid growing up, and you heard all these different raps, to me, it even brought me back to what my parents used to listen to, how every artist tried to be different. Mm-hmm. Like, you would hear Osley Brothers, when you heard an Osley Brothers song, you knew it was them.
Right.
You heard a Stevie Wonder song, and you knew it was them. You know what I'm saying? And so, to me, the beginning of the golden age was when you would hear N.W.A. song and you knew for a fact that it was them. You heard a Rakim song, you knew it was those guys. You heard EPMD, you knew it was them. It wasn't no, wait, hey man, I don't recognize these dudes. You automatically knew who it was.
Actually, a good point, because today, I don't know one rapper from another with these mumble dudes, and I'm not knocking mumble dudes necessarily.
Yes, I'm knocking mumble dudes. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I am knocking mumble dudes.
Okay, and I'm kind of knocking them myself. Let me go ahead and be – I'm more honest about that. Because when I hear them on the radio, it's like I don't know one dude from the other. But like Zay pointed out, you knew who somebody was when their song came on the radio. You immediately knew that was such and such. That's Rakim. That's EPMD, that's Big Daddy Kane, that's whoever. Right. And you recognize their stuff. I don't recognize nobody's stuff nowadays.
And that goes back to the complaint that I had last week. Now, don't get me wrong. Trap music has its own genre. If that's what you choose to do, fine, do what you do. If you're good at it, do it. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not trying to discourage anybody from trying to get do their own thing. I think, like I said, my biggest issue is the fact that it seems to me that everybody's using the same program. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's trying to make their music sound distinctively different from the last person. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, and that is because I think on some levels, not to get too far into what is that now, because the golden era is our topic, but it does seem that it has what is commercially viable now is music that has regressed
tremendously. Exactly. That's what it seems like anyway.
And my point about the golden era is you could be a commercially viable artist and you could also be an actual artist at the same time during that era. You know, the thing I like to point to a lot, I think I like Boot Camp Click, right?
Right.
You know, but for those who don't know, Black Moon, Helter Skelter, original gun clappers, Smith & Wesson.
Right.
It's a clique out of East New York.
Right.
So those dudes, they straight hip-hop artists. They're underground.
Right.
But they existed at the same time as, you know, whoever you want to talk, the Death Row artists that were selling millions of records.
Right.
Or to even localize it more, like Death Row is in California, and they're doing their thing, but Freestyle Fellowship has got all these dope artists, too.
Right.
Hieroglyphics crew up in Oakland with I'm have drawn a blank right now.
Dale and
93 to Infinity.
Souls
of Mischief.
Souls of Mischief.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, had to get that in there.
We're old. We have memory problems. Right. Just, bear with us, man. Come on.
But Souls of Mischief can come out and at the same time it's Too Short is going double platinum.
Right.
You know, the Dog Pound, Snoop. Everybody in Death Row is having these platinum albums.
Right.
Souls of Mischief, Freestyle Fellowship could release albums in that same era.
Yep.
And they coexist.
Yes.
And what I mean by coexist is those artists still, they view each other as peers as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so Snoop Dogg is going to go to the Good Life Cafe and check out these dudes that are rhyming here at Freestyle Fellowship, you know, Micah 9 or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't exist in separate worlds. You don't really have a distinguished – you don't really have a difference between – well, like now we say the backpackers as opposed to the dudes who are, you know, the multi-platinum artists that we hear on the radio all the time. And I think that balance was really key because, you know, you can – look, all artists want to sell records and make money.
Of course.
They all want to do that. But there's also a portion of them that don't want to give up their artistic integrity.
Right.
And I think that's what we had in the Golden Age.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So now, if now that we've given a definition of what we think it was, the question is, when was it?
When was it?
When did it start in your mind?
Well, I know. I just remember. I remember hearing Eric say 86. With me, it starts with 88.
Yeah.
1988, if you just look at a list of a lot of the albums that came out.
It's funny that you should mention that, Hosea. I think that I may have such a list right here in front of me.
As a matter of fact, he did.
Right.
Thank God that Danny did his homework, y'all.
And Zay, to your point, these are some albums that came out in 88. Bismarcky's The Biz Is Going Off.
That thing was ridiculous.
Fresh Prince, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, he's the DJ, I'm the rapper.
Ridiculous.
Tougher Than Leather by Run DMC. Now, keep in mind, this is not even their best work.
I was just about to say too.
Yeah. I agree,
But it had Beats to the Rhyme on it, though, didn't it?
And that,
Was that on Raising Hell?
That was on Raising Hell.
I apologize. Okay.
That's all
right. Dougie Fresh is the greatest entertainer.
Ridiculous.
I'm going to tell you a quick story about that. So my brother, he was a little kid at the time, the older of my two younger brothers. He had a Teddy Ruxpin.
Wow.
You know the Teddy Ruxpin?
Yeah, you put the tape in and my name is Teddy Ruxpin.
My brother put Dougie Fresh's Greatest Entertainer out there. Yeah. Teddy Ruxpin couldn't handle it. It broke the Teddy Ruxpin. When Doug started rhyming, everybody, the Get Fresh crew got to get some. Teddy shut down. You know why? Because Teddy was a rhyme biter.
Yes.
He couldn't handle that. But that's
Teddy
a
was a whack MC.
He was a whack MC.
Very whack.
Teddy Ruxpin was a sucker MC. That's and he couldn't handle Dougie Fresh.
Wow. Rhymes.
Broke the but Teddy Ruxpin.
Yes. That's a Sonic in Full Gear.
Yes.
Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation to
Make a Whole. Here we go.
Freaking classic.
Airbnb and Rakim's Follow the Leader.
Freaking classic.
Salt and Pepper's Assault with a Deadly Pepper.
Ridiculous.
Exactly. N.W.A. Straight Out of Compton.
Ridiculous. Right. I just don't make no
The Great Adventures of Slick Rick by Slick Rick. Mm. You know, these albums are not
They're
not just great albums.
They're classics.
They set the groundwork for everything it seems like they came after in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Marley Marl's In Control, which had the symphony on it.
Now, come on, man. Wait a minute. Symphony video hit,
Was that on?
That's on Control Volume 1.
Volume 1. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I have Volume 1 and Volume 2. Yes. I was thinking of Volume 2 in my mind, and that had a bunch of... That's when artists were trying to put out a lot of those compilations with different rappers.
Yes.
And I appreciated that, quite honestly. He did one... I think Terminator X did one.
In the Valley of Jeep
Beats. Valley of Jeep Beats. What? Man.
Yeah, that came in. That's
loved that album.
Was that
still
1990, baby?
Was it 90 or 91?
Wait a minute.
91, 92, because I was in the Air Force. I was in tech school.
But Marley Marl.
That was 91, late 91.
He set the standard for the compilation CDs.
Oh, no doubt about it. That because if for no other reason than that song, The Symphony.
Yes.
Probably one of the greatest compilations
of all time.
Yes. The video itself. In the saloon.
Yeah.
Just hard, man. Hard.
MC Light. Light as a Rock.
Light as a Rock was out.
Her debut album.
Right.
Yep. Ice-T's album Power, which is his second album.
Yes.
Which is the one with Darlene on the cover. If you don't remember anything else,
the album is great, but you remember that album cover
with Darlene on the cover.
Right.
Big Daddy Kane, Long Live the Kane.
Yes.
Yeah, the front and the back. Yeah, that's true. And, of course, Boogie Down Productions, By All Means Necessary.
Come on, man. And
that's just a few, because we could, if we're going to name 88 albums.
Yeah, we could keep going and going.
Zay, that's a very good year to pick.
Yeah, that's why I would say it began, because you look at all those albums. And the funny thing about it is, like, every album that you just named, not one of them sound the same. Not one.
That's a very good
point. They're all different. They all have their own distinctive sound, and it all stays with the hip hop genre. It doesn't shy away from it. You know what I'm saying?
That is a very good point. One of the things
with that list that you just read off, I'm thinking back in my mind, and I'm saying I probably went out and bought every single one of those tapes, CDs. I would say yes. To some degree, I probably didn't buy the Ice-T one. I liked Ice-T.
I had certain things I didn't buy. I bought it.
Did you buy it just for the cover?
Yeah. Did you buy it just for the cover?
No. I'm going to keep it real. I did until I actually listened to it. And was like, damn.
I would say in my case, no, because the very first rap tape, the tape that I got that I fell in love with rap music, it had Paid in Full on one side. And it had Ice-T's Ron Pays on the other. Okay. So I was already, in 87, I was an Ice-T fan. Okay. So I was going to buy it regardless, but that did not hurt in terms of encouraging me to buy the album cover. I can tell you that.
Like I said, the front and the back, by the way.
Yeah, right. That is so true. That album was tremendous.
In any case, just about every one of those albums you listed, I went out and bought. You know, and you have to, I asked a friend of mine today the same thing. Back then, we went out and we bought these particular albums, and not too many of them were misses. Today, would you really go out and buy a lot of the stuff that's being put out if you did not have the internet to go and download and steal stuff? Would you go to the store and...
Probably not.
Yeah, and right. Most and that's what not. Makes this era, to me... probably the greatest. I don't know what's going to happen 10, 20 years down the road with hip-hop, but this particular time frame in the 80s was just magnificent music being put out by everybody.
By everybody.
You know? So it just.
I will say, in fairness, too, to other people and to other eras, we were young teenagers then, so our level of enthusiasm was going to be much greater than it would be now.
I mean, think about it.
You know, even in the same year, 88, by the way, when NWA released their album, you know, actually, they released Eazy-E's CD.
That is correct.
The same freaking year.
That's right. Yeah. Eazy's album was also in 88, yes. So that's a good point.
I mean, like you said, I agree with you. We were young teenagers, so of course our level of enthusiasm was ridiculous. But just even looking back on it now, and I'm just speaking from an objective standpoint, like, it's hard to match that list. You know what I'm saying?
It is. Well, 88 is probably, and Eric, we're going to get to you too, your when you thought your start of the golden era, but 88 is one of those years that's probably unmatched.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when did you put for your starting?
I've said 86 because, like I said, you were starting to break away from that basic
808 sound.
The band sound, the basic rhyming.
The drum machine only type thing.
Yeah, right. They started... stuff became a little bit, you heard a little bit of sampling being touched on, and you heard it, it's like, oh, this is the same song that my mother has and that big batch of albums she got under under the table over there or whatever. Mm-hmm. You heard some of the songs. And that's kind of when it started. The emceeing became a little, like I say, wasn't as basic. That basic, cat hat, fat set type sound was just going
the
away.
The structure was different.
Much different.
Was starting to become different.
Right. And there was usage, like you say, the 808 was still around, but then you start hearing, the MPC, the MPC 60 started being used, the SP-1200 started being used, the beats became a little more heavy sampled as time went on. So I like 86, just kind of that was a good time when I sort of, my ear became more focused and I became a little more hungry to hear hip-hop music, you know.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always said 87, specifically because, from a personal standpoint, that's when I really started to love it. Like I mentioned, the tape that I had had Eric Green Rakim's Paid in Full on it and Ice-T's Ron Pays. But for some of the same reasons you guys have said, though, the originality and also the sampling – because in 87, we're in full sample mode.
Yes.
Right.
You know, if you don't have James Brown's Funky Drummer or Give It Up, Turn It Loose on your break, and you're not using these drums from this song or that one, you know. Yeah. If you didn't sample the meters, you know, right, or something like that, like you probably didn't have a hit that
exactly.
Year.
Yeah.
But I think that the sampling had a lot to do with it, and the MCs, you know, the Rock M's, the KRS-One's, you know, that was Chuck D comes out in 87. P.E. released their first album. That, to me, was that first year that I was like, you know. And I think that 87 and 88 both kind of spoiled us.
Right.
Because we expected everything that was released every week to be that good.
Yes.
And going forward, I don't know if we, even other years that we would consider in the golden era, I don't know if we ever had that level of quality week after week after week.
Right. With every release.
Well, I don't think that was the case either. Like, I don't think that level kept up with those particular years that it began.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what artists strive to do was to make sure that, let's say, for instance, EPMD, they Strictly Business came out in 88, right?
Mm-hmm.
They released their second album in 89.
Yeah.
All right? So they tried to maintain that same level of success from the first album on to the second album. So it's like every time another artist, especially if it was the consistent artists, I don't know. Is that a word, artists?
I know it's not. It's just artists.
It's just artists, but yeah.
I heard that. I was going to let it
roll. I let it roll. I was like, he on a roll. Let him run.
Hey, man. I can't even front. No drugs this week either, by the way. No drugs. So this is actually me. But anyway.
Let me. So if you say that, you know, one thing that we forget, too, as far as the start of the golden era, Young MTV Raps.
Yes.
Ah, good point.
Especially those of us who grew up, who weren't in New York City, you know,
in order to keep abreast of what was new, kind of watch that. Did BET have a Rap City out?
I don't think it came out until a few years later.
Yeah, it didn't come out until the 90s. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that was a big but you know, I think that so that's when you say it starts, but when would you say
it's a good question because I'm actually torn between a couple of years. 99, I'm torn between either 99, I'm also torn around about 2005.
And the reason is that
golden era. Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But the reason I say that, because in 2005, that's when the internet started popping off.
Right.
And once the internet started popping off, most artists, they stopped dealing with A&Rs. They stopped dealing with the LaFaces, and you know, they started doing their own independent thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So by the time it reached that particular time frame, it didn't matter what, you know, it didn't, if a guy thought you sounded okay, they can just release it on their own. They can distribute it on this by themselves. So it was like, to me, it kind of watered down the music. But at the same time, and I look at 99, I think that was the year where like everybody was trying to do the same thing. You know, they was wearing the shiny stuff, and everybody mm-hmm. was talking about their Rolexes, and they was talking mm-hmm. about, you know, how many girls they got. It necessarily took away from the substance of the music itself. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think it started waning around about 99.
See, for me, you extend yours a little further than me. For me, it's 87 when it starts, and it's 97 when it ends. The reason I say 97 is because in 97, Biggie and Tupac are dead.
Right.
You know, one of them gets killed in 96, the other one in 97.
Right.
And I just felt like there was such a void. You know what I compare it to sometimes, like after Biggie and Tupac both died? Remember, for those of us who like kung fu movies, after Bruce Lee died,
right.
of the fake Bruce Lees.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce Liu, Bruce Lai.
Everybody knew who Bruce Lai was.
Right.
All of Bruce them had a bowl haircut and was wearing those big shades like he wore in a Game of
and
Death.
And walked around with his shirt off just like Bruce Lee.
A lot of imitators, but they could never duplicate who he was. And I felt like after Tupac and Biggie died, there were a lot of rappers that tried to imitate what they were, and they could never duplicate that. And then, like you said, the shiny suit era and some other things, and that's why I put mine at 97. But Eric, you take it a little further than that.
I take it just a hair further than that, just like 99 or so. Mm-hmm. There was still good music
being
put out.
And I'll let you finish your thought, but I don't want people to think that I'm saying there was no good music after that.
Right. No.
I'm just saying that the overall quality, I felt, that's why I said that's the end of it, because there's one of my favorite albums by The Roots, Things Fall Apart, is
right.
99.
Right.
But and that, I, even see, it's and not that's, in my golden era.
And
right.
that's where I'm going with it. There was still good stuff being put out at that point, and I was still just as hungry to go get it, even though I was 29-ing, I'm still hungry to go get hip-hop records. Right. You know, after, like, once 2000 hit, it kind of waned for me, just the sound. There was stuff that was out, but not on the consistency as, like we said, with 88, 89, 90. I shouldn't say everybody, but mostly everyone was putting out really good music that I was hungry to go get. And nobody slacked on anything, hardly. There was just good song after good song after good song from different artists. Some what's my group? Double X Posse.
I'm not going to be able to do it.
I love that song. Man, that was a banger that for the longest time. Yes. And then, you know, it just, songs of that nature from artists that were kind of obscure, but, you know, if you loved hip-hop, you knew who they were.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I think that made that era a golden era, too, is that, and I'm just using from my definition, and actually we can use from your guys' definition, too, actually, because even though you expanded a little bit further out, is that it was the first time that we saw rap music being made that was not just out of New York or just out of Los Angeles.
That's a great point.
You know,
yeah.
because you look at 93, Southern Playalistic, Cadillac Funky Music.
Bro, I was just listening to that.
Outkast comes on
up,
the scene.
By the way.
And Outkast is so important because I felt like for people who were purists and who were really into lyrics, they gave the South a level of legitimacy.
Yes. Right. Yes.
There had been people in the South making records, but a lot of them were more party records. It wasn't really somebody you're going to get into.
Exactly.
Like that. But you had Outkast, you know, you had cats coming out of the Midwest that were, you know, Crucial Conflict, Twista, various cats. You know, of course, and then the West Coast, it wasn't just Los Angeles anymore. Right. Now you got the Bay Area.
Right.
And it was quality coming out of all these areas. You know, Spice One put out a record in the Bay Area.
What's that
you
one
look
song?
Like a Spice One fan.
It was just one song from Spice One that I fell in love with. That's the, you know, the song. I can't remember the name of it, but it was the song where he was talking about how all of the liquors were fighting one another.
I know the one you're talking about. I don't know the name, but yes, I know what you're talking about.
I remember that song. Yeah, I can't think of the name of it either.
My goodness. I'm old, man, so, you know, stuff just don't come to the top of my head.
And the
like
point is, too, that a lot of these artists that were in all of these different places – with, you know, 8Ball and MJG, et cetera, these guys were selling a lot of records.
Yes.
And that's an important. And the other thing that I think is important from that era, the DJs / producer, Premier.
Yes.
Pete Rock.
Yes.
Large Professor.
Yes.
Of course, Dr. Dre.
Dr. Dre,
who was a giant, right?
First billionaire hip-hop artist.
Right.
Even if
he had never done that, his contributions to the music
is...
It brought so much more out of so many more people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think all of that, RZA. God, I can forget RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
You know, the funny thing about Wu-Tang Clan, speaking of RZA, by the way he would incorporate those kung fu sounds in those beats,
he had so many kung fu samples.
It just used
ridiculous.
To freaking blow my mind, bro. Like, goodness gracious.
It's amazing, man. But I think all of those producers, those super producers of that era, too, I think, you know, even you start at the beginning of that era with a guy like Marley Marl.
Right.
Same thing, you know. Marley Marl's producing, you know, all these cats in the Juice Crew.
Yeah.
And then you got, like, we can't forget Q-Tip produced a lot of great stuff.
Yes,
right.
Oh, by the way, I cannot forget Dallas Austin.
Organized Noise is who I was really going to
get at. Those cats, because if I wouldn't have mentioned his name, my cousin would have called me and cussed me out again. So I had to mention Dallas Austin.
Right.
But he actually opened the door because he opened the first studio down south.
Mm-hmm.
Organized Noise was doing their thing out of their basement. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
okay.
They, matter of fact, his mama still owned that house to this day. Mm. Everything that they
house
wrote, all
be
the
a
graffiti,
shrine right
yeah,
now.
To this day, all that stuff is still there. Mm. But Dallas Austin was the first guy to actually open up an actual studio in Atlanta. Mm. So I got to give a shout out to him, you know what I'm saying? Because
and
he
it's
was
really
the first
like
guy
the,
that brought it down here. No doubt
about it. It's really like the golden era was a Renaissance era.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
it's not in the sense that Renaissance means rebirth. So it wasn't necessarily, was it a rebirth or it was just an advancement and a growth?
I just think it was
I think it more, advancement and growth.
Yes.
And something I wanted to touch on too was kind of the social significance of that era and time frame because one thing, it wasn't just our music, speaking from a black person's perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now this stuff is spreading out to Midwest.
Yes.
White kids are starting to get a hold of it, and they're starting to annoy their parents and such with the same music. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of the coin of that, too, is our acceptance of white people liking this music.
Yes.
Like some dudes I know kind of felt a bit funny about, like, well, you know, white people are starting to like our music. Is that, like, what should we do to stop that in a sense? And it's like, no, it's advancing to those levels. They're starting to appreciate it more.
Right.
And then the other side of it,
I think we were probably always okay with them liking it. We really started to get upset when they wanted to participate.
Well, yeah, that's where the beef started.
I understand.
And then also one other thing too was it became a little more. It was realized by corporate America, hey, we need to get in on this.
Yes, yes.
I can remember, and to this day, it kind of bugged me, and I think I touched on it with y'all in the last. It was a damn post Coco Pebbles commercial. Mm-hmm. And it had Fred and Barney, and Fred was rapping with a wooden mic, and Barney's on some stone turntables.
Wow.
I remember that commercial.
Scratching and cutting.
That commercial.
And that is when it, like, you know, it became they're starting to grab pieces of it and trying to, you know.
Taking pieces and bits of all the hip-hop hits.
You know, hell.
Get the style down pat, then it's time to switch.
Switch, right. You know, hell. There was a Toys R Us commercial, I think, with goddamn, excuse my French, Jeffrey Giraffe is rapping with his, like, giraffe family.
Right.
And it's like, okay, it's going a little far.
Yeah,
but
that is true. I think the thing I always point to is the NWA album, Niggas for Life.
Yes.
When they were able to sell 4 million copies with no airplay, I think that's when corporate America realized that we can't continue to ignore this.
To ignore this, right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's one of those things where it's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because it's a good thing because it opened up a lot of opportunities for a lot of people. But as we know, when corporate entities get involved, they don't care about artistic value.
Exactly.
They care about, you know, this was the formula that these guys used to make lots of money. Yes. Let's copy this.
Yes.
And so, you know, and that kind of
helped kind of water it down from that standpoint, because it's like, well, I want you to sound like this guy. I want you to sound like that guy. And I'm like, well, that's not the reason. That shouldn't be the reason I'm here. These guys, they paved the way sounding like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Because they were, you know, everybody before that was, there was nobody to tell you what to do.
Right.
Give you instructions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
You know, so then that leads to the question of, when does it end? Or we said when it ends, but what is the reason for the ending?
I think you just explained it. I just think that as soon as corporate America took hold of it, and especially when you got guys coming into the business, not necessarily, like, if you're poor and you all of a sudden you get a $100,000 contract, then you're going to pretty much do whatever they tell you to do, because they're investing. Even though they're investing in you, they're not necessarily investing in the art. They're just investing in, okay, if I put $100,000 in this artist, what can I get back from it? You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't necessarily about the artistic aspect of it. It was more so about how much money I can get back from investing into this dude. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's when it started. That's when you start seeing the corniness coming out. That's when you were seeing the shiny suits and, you know, dudes in black and white, and then this other dude in black and white, and it's like,
Some of what they were trying to pass off as art,
right,
was not actually art. It was just people being goofy.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know some of that you don't recognize. Like when you talk about the golden era of anything, people never realize that they're in the midst of the golden age until it's gone.
Until it's gone, right? And then you
don't
realize
know what you got till it's gone. Joni Mitchell, right?
and the unfortunate thing about it is, it happens to every genre. It didn't just happen in hip hop.
That's true.
Look at the state of R&B right now.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Now that's a good point, but we can talk about that another day.
A whole other time.
That is true. Yeah. So then I will. Let me ask you this, Eric. Do you think there'll ever be another golden era? Do you think we'll revisit that? You have to actually vocalize that. Look, in a manner. Yeah, man,
that's how you can tell how old he is when you hear that grunt back in the background.
That's an old man answer.
Yeah, it really is. And listening to what we have out here now, this is what is getting pushed to the forefront.
Right.
Where even if there are lyricists who are out there that are similar to what we consider the golden era of hip-hop.
And they do exist.
And there's a lot of them out there. I mentioned Joey Badass last week, and there's some others out there. I like Anderson .Paak's style of rapping, even though he's sort of a singer-rapper.
Right,
but
yeah.
There are lyricists out there. But
Freddie Gibbs and Madlib put out a dope album.
Yes, they did. There's some other guys out here that I like, but they're not going to get any push for hear.
Right.
You need radio because, quite honestly, you're not just going to find a lot of these artists just off the top of your head. They have to be pushed on radio for you to want to find them.
They have to be presented to you in some way.
Right.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not seeing these guys. These guys are, it's almost in a sense, they're all sort of underground. So unless you can go find some of these people and search them out for yourselves, I don't think we'll have another golden era unless it changes from this, like I say, this sort of style of mumbly rap and different, you know, these artists that you can't really distinguish.
And that's the problem because it has to be a certain style. Like, we don't live in an era now where A Tribe Called Quest can release Midnight Marauders and Wu-Tang Clan come into the 36 Chambers, which are two entirely different albums.
But they were both fantastic.
Both fantastic.
And I think they both hit four mics in The Source at the time. You know, that's another part. Excuse me, five mics.
I'm glad you mentioned that because The Source was an important part of the Golden Era.
Thank you.
It was very important.
I don't know where they are to this day. I think my ex-wife and her storage unit, somehow they all got taken away, but
your
I had a collection.
You done burned them, dog.
Well, they probably gone or thrown out, but I bought The Source every week that one came out. Whenever they came out, I had a new one. I had a stack of them.
Yes.
And like you say, that was where you got a lot of hip-hop info.
It was two things that you always check for. First of all, when they always had
album ratings.
The album ratings, you look for how many mics they got.
Right.
And it was always that verse that they put in. It was always one verse.
Rhyme of the month.
Rhyme of the month.
Remember LL said Rhyme of the Month in The Source for 20 years?
Yeah.
For those who don't know, The Source was a magazine. It was a hip-hop magazine. It's a magazine of hip-hop, culture, and politics, I think is what they used to
title was.
And it was extremely popular, especially in the 90s.
Yes.
It was a who's who of rapping, of rap music, and it was a great... The Source was would we equate it to now as far as magazines?
How I would even go so far to say it was the equivalent of a urban version of Time magazine.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hmm. It was like Time magazine for hip hop.
Yes,
good point. Yes.
And that was and it was extremely important.
Yes. Very important.
So I will say that I don't know if we'll ever have another golden era, only because the way the music is absorbed and digested these days.
Yes.
You know, you got even the people who are really big stars, they put an album out, people talk about it for a week, and then they move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
We get so much now. There's so much available.
Right.
We don't consume music the same way. You know, we don't go out and buy it. We don't go to the store, buy a cassette tape, bring it home while we're listening to it, open up the inside cover, read the shout-outs, the liner notes, who produced the tracks, read all of the lyrics.
Yeah, you don't see that anymore.
People don't do that, and I think that was all of that – contributed to making the era golden.
Right. And I will go so far as to say, too, like I think there's a potential for it to be another one, but at the same time, I think not only do the artists or the producers have to realize it, I just think even the people that's putting the money behind it, we all just have to realize that because we're moving to society and everything is like quick, fast, and easy. You know what I'm saying? Everything has to be convenient for them. So if there's a way that you can make it more convenient where you can get all that type of information, maybe we can have one. But
I think you don't think that sometimes it's maybe too convenient? And maybe that's why people value it.
That goes towards laziness is what it is. You said quick, fast, and easy. Easy being the key word. It's like... The simplistic rhyme flow.
Yes.
They're going back to that. Nothing is there's no complex wording in these rhymes from these dudes nowadays. It's some of them do, but then hell, you're mumbling half of it, and I can't understand what you're saying. And like you said, Zay, it's up to the people up top to kind of say, okay, no more of this. Let's bring in some other people that
the record execs and the program directors.
It's like instead of you actually cooking your food naturally, you just throw it in the microwave and then you throw it in for a minute and you get it out and it's already warmed up.
Think of it like HelloFresh, I guess, you know, that kind of stuff. They deliver everything prepackaged to you, set up. All you got to do is basically throw it in a pot and just... And there it is. Warm this up.
Yes.
This is done. You put no effort into it. Yes. You don't do any chopping, really. Yes. You don't do any measuring of ingredients.
Yes.
And from a hip-hop standpoint, there's no, okay, let me go back and rewrite this and try to put some good wordplay into stuff.
Right.
They don't really do that. It's very rare. I've heard some artists on the radio, and you hear a line, it's like, okay, that was, you know, a nice little line right there, but for the most part, no.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that may be attributed to what you were saying, too, about, you know, the people up top, the people who make the decisions as to what's going to be played and what we're going to hear on a grand scale.
Right.
They don't, you know, and maybe that's part of it, too. So we went through a time period in the 90s when Clear Channel went and bought up a bunch of radio stations all over the country. There are no independent stations really to speak of anymore.
Right, exactly.
So your playlist in New York City sounds just like your playlist in Dallas, Atlanta. Texas.
Exactly.
Sounds like your playlist in Seattle, Washington. Whereas before, do y'all remember, I don't even know if y'all remember this, but I was stationed in Memphis at the time. This DJ Jimmy had this song, Shake It Baby, Shake It Baby. I can't remember the name of him. But anyway, this dude was like out of somewhere in New Orleans, and he was really big in Memphis.
Mm.
And other parts of the country didn't know the song, anything. It was garbage, honestly, but it was big there. The point is, the regional DJs could take your song and they could make you hot.
Yeah.
You know, like you look at a group like UGK.
Yeah.
Coming, I don't know if UGK would have had the opportunity with Clear Channel owning all of the radio stations, because if somebody who's making the decisions in New York didn't like it, it's not going anywhere.
Yep. Exactly. And that's what it's come to. Like I said, I know back when the days when I used to rap. By the way, I used to rap, you know, back in the 90s too. By the way, and you know, I would come across a lot
Mose of Mose Southbound.
There you go. It was kind of hidden too. By the way, as a matter of fact, just be off subject for a quick. You know, you can go ahead and throw your timer on and everything. But this is the funny thing. I talked to my cousin the other day, right? And he got all nostalgic on me. He talking about, hey, man, we can release that CD right now today. And I'm sitting here like, bro, stop it, bro. I'm just talking for a living, bro.
Right.
Come on, man. Those days are long gone, man.
Right.
I'm old, in my 40s and fat, you know. I ain't trying to be on no doggone tours or nothing like that, man. I just want to give the people what they want as far as what we're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
So, I totally understand.
But getting back to my point, though, that's one of the things that I've always just complained about was the fact that, like I said, everything sounds the same. Everything want to be done fast, quick, fast, and easy, and it's just like, it's like people don't no longer want to put in an effort. And even a good artist, because there are some good artists out today that focus on lyrics, you know
they
what I'm saying?
But they don't get that promotional push and that corporate push.
A lot of times when I speak to people that love, like, the trap music, it's like those particular type of artists don't come off as appealing to them, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, they can just look at them like, nah.
They say they boring.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it's like.
Are they boring because they make you think?
Because it could
you have
be the
to
case.
Dissect the lyrics?
That could be the case. I mean, you know, like, just to be a little political or whatever thing. I mean, it seems to me that education is just being taken out of everything. Now we in a society where it's cool to be dumb. You know,
if you don't, if you're not taught critical thinking skills, you may not have the same appreciation for Black Thought, that you would have for Migos,
right?
Because they're just going,
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and I ain't taking that away from Eagles or what they've done. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
no.
You know, just
and my thing
is
that that's fine. There's just no issue with that. But there's no balance, though.
None.
And those types of artists should be able to. And that was the whole thing about the Golden Era, is that they were able to exist side by side.
Yes.
end though. So
and then all of the artists even appreciated one another. Like you look at a guy, you look at a guy like you mentioned, like Snoop Dogg, right? He could go chill with Dale the Funkus on Home and Safe. Right. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Like, it wasn't a real big deal.
To touch on that, Zay, I think about it from the standpoint of the source. When you looked in the source and you saw pictures of these guys, it would be different guys together.
Yes.
From different places. Yes. Big Daddy Kane taking a picture with Snoop and Crucial Conflict.
Yes.
That's a weird combination. Yes. But you saw them arm in arm because they respected each other as artists.
Even if the music didn't always reflect that.
Right.
But you knew that with a lot of the artists, they were certainly cool.
Yep.
Well,
one other thing can I touch on
yes,
real
sir,
quick?
Definitely.
I think we left off a fact. For me, during this golden era, one thing that kind of made a big difference, I think, also shout out to the mixtape DJs.
Yes.
That is true.
So you had people like DJ Clue, you had SNS, you had Kid Capri, you had Ron G, Tony Touch, Funkmaster Flex.
You don't forget what's his name? Magic Mike down in the South.
Or Jam Pony.
Yes. Or so, King Edward J.
Yeah. And Jam Pony is that's another subject, but they make me laugh.
You know, and so
but very influential.
These particular mixtapes put out different songs that maybe we hadn't heard before. You know, it kind of helped you to go buy that particular album because you track down, oh, shit, what was that? And it was such and such doing whatever, his little piece on that mixtape. It helped you to go find their album and go buy it. So I want to give a shout out definitely to the mixtape DJs because that was important. And even before mixtape DJs was just radio DJs out of New York, let's say, Red Alert and Mr. Magic.
Yes.
That time frame was pretty dope because they were in this kind of war. It was kind of this BLS and 98.7 Kiss war back and forth.
Yes.
And it was great to get mixtapes.
They call it the Bridge Wars when KRS-One is going at the Juice Crew.
Right.
It was almost exclusively because of what Mr. Magic had said to him and Scott LaRock.
Right.
You know, and actually, if you listen to P.E.'s Nation of Millions album, they have the thing on there where they're saying, no more music by the suckers. No more music by the suckers. It's actually Mr. Magic's voice.
Yep.
They took that. Mr. Magic had dissed them on the air.
Yep.
So Mr. Magic was important sometimes in a positive way.
Sometimes in a bad way.
Right.
But you ended up starting a battle. Right. Starting a war.
And Mr. Magic did not hold his tongue.
Right.
Rest his soul.
Yeah.
But we could talk about this golden era literally all day because that is where we came up in. And obviously, we think it's a golden era. That's the one that we love the most. But we do have to cut this short. So we just want to say to everybody, if you made it this far in the podcast and you listened to all of it, thank you so much for listening. Because I think most of our listeners, though, I think they probably have. Because I think that they are – many of the people who have listened to us to this point are probably in our age group and have
– a decent attention span.
Right. Yeah, that too. You know, but definitely, hey, if you listen to this, share it with someone that you think might like it. Please subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on. You can listen to us on our website. You can go to iTunes Radio as well as some others that are listed on our website that'll tell you where you can listen. Please subscribe. The subscribers are going to help us a lot going forward if you really want to see this grow. And that's pretty much it. Until next time, thank you for listening. Peace.
Check it out, y'all. Holla.